Hello, good day. This is the Harbor Advisory Board, October 6th, 2022. We have established a quorum, and so we can begin. Lori, would you like to do roll?
Member O'Brien?
Present.
Member Myers?
Present.
Member Green?
Present.
Chair Hansen?
Present.
Member Dowdy? Member Vail? Member Witkowski? You have a quorum.
Okay, we have a quorum of four. I'd like to call this meeting to order. Let's have a moment of silence for everything that's going on, especially in Florida with the fatalities and all the things that they need to be doing over there. So, moment of silence. Cal, can you lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance, please?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God.
All right. So we have the board member and liaison announcements. I'll start with Jeremiah.
Yes, thank you, Cherise. I've got a few announcements here. There is some albacore in town for those people who like to can or to eat albacore. They're available at the end of Beach Street on a vessel called the Tilly. That's Jack Carpenter. And then also Alan Allred on the Longfin. And I think he's in now, and if he isn't, he'll be in the next day or two. But he's on the long fin, and he will be in that same area selling fish. Also, I'd like to mention that the Rotary is having their duck derby down on the waterfront on Saturday morning at 8:30. And the duck derby start, they float, if anybody's not familiar with it, they float little rubber ducks. And you pick a duck, you get a number and all that, and they float them, and they'll pick them up down at Tidelands Park. And the winners in the duck race will be announced at the Morro Bay Maritime Museum at 10:30 a.m. the same morning. And at the Maritime Museum, beginning at 10, there is a family fun event. And it's free to the public. It's open to the public. It'll be a wonderful time. It's very kid-friendly. Bring the kids. There's going to be fish prints. There's an old dive suit that the kids and the adults even will be able to actually get into to see how the old hard hat divers used to to see what it felt like to be in one of their work uniforms. There's also a muffin contest, a chowder contest, all kinds of games. And that starts at 10 a.m. down at the Maritime Museum. It'll be a lot of fun for everybody. It's free, and I hope you can all make it there. Todd Gazzini's will be making albacore tacos, and I think there'll be oysters, and so it should be a great time anyway. And that's it.
Thank you, Member O'Brien. All right, Cal Myers.
No announcements. I'll save mine for the outreach at the end.
Okay, and Member Green.
I just want to acknowledge Harbor Advisory Board member O'Brien. I went to the U.S. House of Representatives meeting here in Morro Bay, which sort of blew me away at the level of due diligence that was going into offshore wind and all the different panelists that were up there speaking, many of whom were our local representatives. And I think Member O'Brien did an admirable job representing the fishing community at that hearing. It just blew me away. I was super impressed, and that's an ongoing project here in Morro Bay that everyone needs to be aware of.
Thank you, Sean.
All right. Thank you, Sean. Okay, I'm going to do some of my announcements. So we have, with the Chamber, we have the Shop Sip and Stroll that is going to happen November 27th in downtown. Also, the Chamber is putting on Breakfast on the Bay, which is October 19th at 7:30 a.m. And that is it for my announcements today. Do we have any other members or the liaison in the queue?
Thank you, Chair. We have no raised hands in the queue.
Okay. Thank you very much. Okay. So I just need to get a little understanding from everybody. Is it okay if we do public comments before I do the presentation? Because we have some public comments in the audience that would like to do that before.
I concur.
Okay, we're all good. Okay, so right now I'm going to open public comment and go for it.
My name is Homer Alexander. I am on the committee that supports Measure B-22, the $120 per year parcel tax to pay for major maintenance and replacement of the harbor's infrastructure. I know that all of you understand the issue a lot better than most. I have some pictures that will do a much better job than I can explain the problems. There isn't a realistic alternative to the parcel tax. Some have suggested diverting the sales and TOT taxes generated by the waterfront businesses from the general fund to the harbor fund. This only reduces the money in the general fund by an equal amount, money that is needed to pay police officers, firefighter paramedics, and to maintain our streets. The city only has so much money. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have another public at this time? Come up.
Oh, my first time here. Do I push one of these buttons? No? Okay. My name is Chuck Lostness. I'm a member of Morro Bay Yacht Club, and I have my sailboat on one of their moorings. I've been involved in sailing for about 50 years now. The one thing that this harbor doesn't have, and I see part of it's on the agenda for this meeting, is a real shipyard. It's the only harbor from San Diego to San Francisco that doesn't have one. And I understand the costs, and I've talked with Dana McLeish extensively about this, especially when I first came here about 7 years ago. Dana was kind of saying, well, it looks like we might get a shipyard. But it never has happened and doesn't look like it's going to happen. But I don't know. But I thought I'd bring it up. In talking with members, Port San Luis, and I'm due to haul my boat right now, isn't really a viable opportunity because you never know when they can haul you. And once you get hauled, when you might get back in the water. Some people have a hard time with the owner there, but I don't. I get along with them. German Joe, as in your report, and I don't know the name of his boatyard. I don't know him personally. Friends know him, have good things to say about him. But he can only get out one boat at a time, and in my opinion, his crane is sketchy. I don't even know if it's insured anymore because of its age. A solution that I think to a shipyard is not needing a travel lift. I was in Mexico on my boat for 7 years, and three summers I hauled my boat at a place called Marina Seca San Carlos. And I have pictures of that I brought to share. They use a hydraulic trailer to pick your boat up. I don't know if you guys would like to see these or not, or...
I've got seven copies. I'll swipe to see one. The first picture is of my boat getting ready to be picked up. The second picture is they've moved it forward on over the trailer, and they have these hydraulic pads that, can I keep talking or?
Can we have two more minutes?
Okay, and then the third picture shows it picked up on a hydraulic trailer. They then haul it about 3/4 mile into their yard, actually out on the edge of the desert. And I think it would be feasible to use the same type of a setup here off of our launch ramp. It's no better, no worse than the one down there at San Carlos in Mexico. And I think it would cut the cost of any potential shipyard significantly to use that setup instead of trying to put in all of the infrastructure for a travel lift. And we do have frequently people that have to go elsewhere to haul their boats out. I know one club member has got his boat and been in Oxnard right now at Channel Islands. Another gal has got to take hers up to Monterey so she can get an insurance survey. There's one club member, he's got his boat at Port San Luis right now. Took him a year and a half on their wait list before they could haul him out. And about 2 weeks ago, I think it was, we had a transient come into our dock. The guy needed a haul out for some kind of a repair and had to limp down to Ventura, you know, with his boat at risk before he could get it out of the water. So anyway, I just wanted to add my two cents that I think we really need this. And I think if it's done right, it would be a viable economic thing for somebody. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Do we have another public comment for this time period? Seeing we have an audience today, it's nice to see some people out here, but I'm going to ask, do we have anybody online in queue with their hand raised?
Thank you, Chair. We have no raised hands in the queue.
All right. Thank you very much. Okay, so now we get to go to our presentations, and we are lucky enough to have the Pacific Wildlife Care here, Jerry Roberts, representing, and she brought the peregrine falcon, Moro, the peregrine falcon.
Around predator, and that means at night it might be a great cornell, but during the day, part of our local journal. If I go out somewhere and take a bite like that, which I do, he will, all the birds will all of a sudden get rid of his meat. Other structure, and they will get out of the way. So they are almost as big as the male. All birds of prey is a third large. So the female stays on the nest and is the hunter. And so the male goes out and gets food. I will not leave the nest. Is the male. So close to this series, all the will make a packing sound. Fly out and come to a plane. I want to tell them to transfer. Grab that food, back to the babies. Afterwards, I think she's. He doesn't want to come into the nest. Almost as big as he is. After where they scratched an eye or something like that, they, you know, just. That could be a death sentence. They are incredibly fast, as I said, 2 miles an hour. They are filled to see. And I just want to tell you one or two facts that I think. One is they're up his feet, there's these little muscles just like that. They have a little something in it. Almost looks like bone, but it's not cartilage like this. What that does is when he's flying super high speed, we have copied that adaptation. That's the tone of the project. That's what their purpose is. Oh, sorry. They do also have, I'm not sure, much in their beak. Much in it, that fits perfectly in the vertebrae. I don't want to slow down at any point. Once they grab let's say he's got a duck, he's flying with it, and they normally kill on impact, but if they didn't, they're just they are, like I said, they were almost extinct. Last two, no, are off. Have now procreated and have been islands all the way down to San Diego, past San Francisco. So they made a wonderful comeback. That's because we saw And they don't tend to migrate because they migrate. But if they were to go down to San Diego,
I know they try to keep the birds off the fire station. Is that the gentleman that helps with that?
I don't know that he has a parrot. He has raptors.
Huh.
I had a question. The lots of signage that we have around town and on the beach is sort of meant to help the public stay informed about the snowy plover and what we can do for the snowy plover. Is there anything like that for this, or is it like what can the public do, if anything?
Do you know how old he is?
I have a pretty good guess. When he first came, these bonds here, probably closer to two. I had him about 9 years.
Wow, that's a...
So, with birds of prey, they have a 2% mortality rate that first year. That first year is wrong. Like the first year, I typically more normal. So his lifespan in the wild, if he survived that first year, could be. But in captivity. But that's not normal. After they fly. That doesn't happen to that height, but the ones locally here, you might see.
The falcons have been breeding on the rock now for quite a few years. And does anybody keep track of the fledged birds, how many survive, and where they go?
Yeah, and that's how we know their distribution, because they don't band them. But we can't track them because when they fledge, they start heading in a certain direction. We can't track them, and I'm not sure. That's why we know kind of where they've grown up. That's mostly to see that's mostly to make sure that if they have any issues and are still in our area, that we can pull them back in. The only problem with them was it actually rarely poisoned them outright. What happened is it was in their eggshells. So that's why they had to be pulled out of the wild and rehab them and put back into the environment.
Is that going to be a problem?
So in the status report, it says that a hiker was up there close to one of the peregrine falcons. Do you know which pair the hiker was near?
The front side is guarded pretty well, but that's the easiest access.
So it must have been that one.
I know that a lot of them try to go up at night with headlamps.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I didn't see that.
Okay. Right.
So maybe there's a way up.
Yeah. All right.
Any questions about Pacific Wildlife Care?
Brock?
Great. Well, yeah, thank you so much for inviting me.
Thanks.
Absolutely, and thank you so much for your time and showing us Morrow. That was really awesome, a special treat. Appreciate it, and all that you do for all of the wildlife and the birds. Okay, so that concludes our presentations for this evening. Thank you, Jerry Roberts. We're going to open up public comment one more time before we start with our consent calendar. Is there anybody in the audience that would like to... No? All right. Hyland, anybody on the internet in queue with
Thank
their hand raised?
Chair, we have no raised hands in the queue.
Okay. Thank you so much. All right. So we're going to go to consent calendar. And at this point, does anybody want to pull A1 or none? Should we do a motion? A motion, anybody?
Accept the consent calendar?
As approve the consent calendar,
yes.
as is.
Yes,
anybody
please.
Second? All second? Okay, so we're going to move. Do you want to vote on that? There we go. Laura's going to vote.
Member O'Brien? Member Myers?
Yes.
Member Green?
Yes.
Chair Hansen?
Yes.
Your motion passes.
Okay, thank you. I know that it was in the status report, and I'm going to take this moment to look at the fact that it was stated in the status report that Eric Endersby, Master Harbor Department Head, it will be leaving us come December. He has some pretty cool stuff in his future, and we are lucky enough to have him at least one more HAB meeting, so we can, you know, talk about him then, nice or whatever. Anyway, and so we'll save all that for our last meeting, right? And but yes, thank you so much, and I just wanted to bring attention to that, and we will be in search of a new harbor master. So, and that will be some possible conversations in future agendas. So right now we're going to move on to our business items. We have B1, which is consideration of Planning Commission Subcommittee on Public Benefits Menu Report and Public Benefits Menu. And we are pleased to have one of our board members present this.
Thank you, Sharif. My name is Sean Green. I'm on the Harbor Advisory Board, but I'm also a member of a three-person committee. The other two people being Planning Commissioners Joe Ingrafia and Mike Rodriguez. A number of months ago, almost a year ago now, two separate sort of ad hoc committees were initiated in the at the Planning Commission level. One of which was a or continues to be a sort of planning streamline, different ways to streamline the planning process for developers, make things easier, ask what some general difficulties are that developers have. So that's one subcommittee that's sort of concurrent to this one. The one that I am a part of and the item that I'm presenting here today is called the Public Benefits Subcommittee. And how it got initiated was basically there are certain zones in town, mainly planned development zones, which does encapsulate waterfront properties that are part of the Tidelands Trust. And there's a code line item that essentially requires some properties, depending on what they're asking for, to provide what's called greater than normal public benefit or significant public benefits. And so one of those examples is waterfront properties that want to build higher than 17 feet, which then possibly could allow construction up to 25 feet if there's sort of a demonstration to the Planning Commission and Council that greater than normal or significant public benefit is achieved by allowing them to build to that height. And so what our committee has basically done, and I'll try to summarize this to the best of my ability, there's a complete report in today's agenda if anyone at home wants to read it from start to finish. At this stage, what our committee and the Planning Commission is looking for is feedback from other advisory boards and members of the public about the concept of public benefits and how that process may play out for developments of different sizes. Our aim is not to make development more difficult. So small projects will likely be exempt from this process. It's more for like medium, large scale, huge jumbo type projects that may be asking for a height variance, or let's say the property is a pie shape instead of a normal rectangle and there are certain driveway width allowances or whatever the exception or the variance might be. And so as part of our committee's sort of brainstorming to try to figure out ways to codify and simplify the process of developers proposing public benefits, what we've tried to do is create a number of trigger points that may encourage developers to proactively sort of offer or present projects that already include public benefit items above and beyond the project that they're proposing. Okay. A number of cities in California are doing this. It's happening more and more where, for example, the project, the hotel project on Highway 41, I believe it was built to 37 feet in a zone that the maximum is 30 feet. Our committee is not really making a judgment call as to whether that should be allowed at all or not, but because significant public benefits were required in order to grant that, the developer proposed things like public electric vehicle charging stations, pedestrian sidewalk improvements above and beyond curb gutter and sidewalk, lighting, safety measures, signage, that kind of thing around Highway 41. So we've sort of initiated as a committee and including public feedback a menu of sorts that offers developers many ideas from which to pull potential public benefit items as part of their development application. Okay, so conceptually that's sort of what we're doing and where we're at. What I think Harbor Advisory Board could contribute would be sort of a general, any individual ideas or opinions about the philosophy surrounding public benefits. Do we like this at all? Do we want to encourage more physical improvements to sites around town, infrastructure improvements, wayfinding signage, that kind of thing? Or should we pursue things more conceptual, like more affordable housing, land grants, easements to the city? As one of the things that came up during the offshore wind discussion was the potential for community benefits agreements like mandatory local hiring. So anything is really possible as part of this discussion, but as the city has some really big projects on the horizon that I won't specifically mention, but we all kind of know exist out there, now is the time to get the concepts of public benefits out into the conversation so that the city can ask for items proactively rather than wait for a project to be proposed to the city, at which point we may not be prepared to reach a symbiotic, like mutually beneficial development arrangement. I guess that's the best thing I can say. So hopefully some members of the board have some thoughts, maybe some items that you'd love to see in town that would benefit the public in general. They could be as small as a fire hydrant on a corner to as big as a huge land grant to the city or the Morro Bay Open Space Alliance or something like that. So anything is possible. Tell us what you think you'd like to see in the city of Morro Bay, especially in conjunction with private development. So the last thing I'll say is one focus that a couple members of the Planning Commission stressed was this idea of nexus, is how they phrased it. So if, for example, a major project was proposed that increased fire danger in town, then it would seem likely that we might require improved fire safety, possibly a second fire station, so at least that we see some sort of alignment between additional burdens and the public benefits that could be gained from those additional burdens. So that's just one of infinite examples. I'll leave it at that and open it up to questions from anyone at all, and I'll do my best to answer it. Thank you.
Yes, go for it. Any questions?
I guess just a couple of just logistics questions. I mean, I read through the report when the agenda was released. It's ambitious, it's well written, so hats off to that one. I'm now envious. You guys addressed it in the paper, but you have the spreadsheet of things that you can do, and a lot of the relationship to the project and how big each benefit is and how much. That seems pretty difficult. Is that something that you guys expect to try to put guidelines on, or is that really up to like city staff?
Subjective? I'm not. What?
Well, I see it two ways. Like we talked about the fire hydrant, right? Mm-hmm. So if I build the building out of shake, and it's $1 million investment, do I put in $100 fire hydrant? So how do you rate how much benefit should I come with in order to get that variance?
That's a great question, and any benefits, the best we've gotten to this point would be commensurate with the size and scope of either the project or any burdens that inherently come with a project. Now, there already exists this gray area when it comes to what is a significant public benefit, and that's part of the reason why we started this process altogether, is to try as best we can to codify some of these things. Now, again, this isn't for every zone in town. It's for some of our more high-impact zones. It's also not something that would apply to your average single-family residence, really. This is medium to huge projects here in town that would potentially come with big asks from developers and or potentially big burdens that would need to be offset.
Gotcha. And then from a help perspective, what would be the best avenue from that?
From you guys?
Yeah.
I think any concepts that you feel like are ignored in the menu, anything you want to bring up in those regards, like really, again, anything is possible, but if you have ideas for the kinds of things that developers might propose, developers are kind of asking for these menu items because the practice historically has been planning staff goes back to them and says, you need to provide significant public benefit if you're going to try to do X, Y, and Z, and the developer's like, well, what kinds of public benefits are there?
Yeah.
And staff historically has been like, well, we've got bike racks, we've got EV charging stations, and it was like a really finite, limited list that we're trying to add to. Now, that's not a fixed list. Even though we'd be presenting a menu to potential developers, that would just be a basis for their own creativity, and we would actually encourage private developers to propose public benefits that also benefit the private parcel whenever possible.
I guess from a mechanics perspective, we don't want to run afoul of any brown acts or anything like that. So with the best communication method, I guess.
Well, if folks have something on their mind right now, I think now is a great time to share their input, including the public, but also sending. I think probably the best way would be to submit, if anyone on this board has comments separate from this meeting, including members of the public, if you submit that to Scott Graham of Community Development Director Scott Graham, if he receives those by email, we'll certainly get it as part of the committee. Planning Commission is likely to look at this item one last time before it goes to council, and council will decide if we're going to have an official document or an ordinance or a staff directive or whatever that shape will end up looking like.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
Jeremiah, do you have any questions? Okay. When you were thinking about small, medium, and large, talking about Tidelands is made up of land leases, water leases, and so some of these properties are multiple land leases, multiple water leases. Were you including the water leases when you were calculating the square footage?
We were not. We were including only land square footage, and everything on our report, so today is not an opportunity necessarily to ratify or oppose like a specific square footage, but if there are different methodologies or different quantities of square feet or different ways to measure the magnitude of a project, that we'd love to hear that as well. We kicked around some ideas and sort of settled on that as the easiest, most transparent, most functional method, but we're open to any possibilities that you see as alternatives.
Okay. Some of your examples, just looking at it, I'm trying to figure it out. Eric, you might know the answer to this. You used as the example of a small one, gosh, I can't find it now, the aquarium or three stacks spelled with an X. Do you know if, because that's not a small parcel land lease for the aquarium? Am I wrong? That's what I was trying to find.
I would have to defer to what
PC and the subcommittee are using as their criteria for small, medium, and large?
Yeah, okay, so it's on page 9, referring to Gray's Inn, which that makes sense, and then it says aquarium, 3 stacks, and then it says the salt building, which it's probably close to, well, if you're including the water, I think it's bigger. And then the medium, that wouldn't include 833 Embarcadero, because that, if you're just considering land, it it's smaller than 7,500.
Yeah, so there's a little bit of a nuance there, because the salt building and the 3 stacks were remodels and not teardowns, and so we were considering those more conceptually rather than a square footage standpoint, because salt basically just converted an upstairs unit into a vacation rental, and 3 stacks conversion was, again, a remodel of a portion of a project, as opposed to 833, which was a teardown, start from scratch. That was part of the thinking there.
Okay. Well,
I don't think they're looking at the square footage of the lot, per se, unless you're going to develop the whole lot. It's the scale of the project, and that can be a giant building and a giant lot with a small remodeling. Correct me if I'm wrong, Sean. I think that's what they're looking at from a scale standpoint, small, medium, and large.
Yeah, and we actually...
Scale of the improvement, not necessarily of the property.
Of the improvement, right. Usually it's a lot of times it's dollar value, right? The dollar value of the project.
Well, we shied away from dollar value. Right. We didn't like dollar value because there's too much wiggle room there. That's why we thought we'd want to be a little bit more objective with square footage. But, yeah, we actually didn't most of our thinking was about tear down, start from scratch, square footage.
So anyway, during the discussion and my input, I'll talk about that, because it is very convoluted on the waterfront. I would, at least in this particular situation, you have to take into consideration the extent of the lease. Are we talking 10 years? Are we talking 50 years? Because that also will play into what benefit should be increased based on how many more years that building is going to be there, not just at a straight square footage. So I guess that's it for my questions. I'm going to open up public comment right now on this subject. Seeing none in the audience. Hyland, do we have anybody in the queue?
Thank you, Chair. We have no raised hands in the queue.
All right. Thank you very much. Okay. So going around the table, Jeremiah, do you want to begin what you want to suggest? Or?
No.
No? Nothing at this time? Okay. Cal?
Me neither. I read it. I'd like to, contribute, but I'm not here at the meeting. So I was looking for can I send an email to somebody or something? Yeah.
Yeah, I think that anything that anyone doesn't get to, including folks at home, anyone happens to be watching, anyone in the audience here, if you want to submit comments, go ahead and send them to Scott Graham. I hope Scott's okay with that. I'm pretty sure he's okay with that, and he'll forward it to the committee. We've been going to a number of meetings and trying to get feedback. It's actually been pretty hard to get some feedback, and so we'd love to broaden the audience, and so spread the word. It needs to come sooner rather than later. We don't have a hard deadline on when that feedback needs to come, but the projects that this might affect are coming up quicker than we might be ready for. So the sooner these comments can come in, the more we can be ready to send this off to council.
Okay, then I'm the one that's left for the discussion portion. Let's see. So, start from the beginning. So, personally, I was present during your February meeting for the Planning Commission for the public benefits, and I did request that I could be possibly part of it, and I'd like to extend that to include now with any future consideration that you have. So, and then I do know that during that meeting, the Planning Commission members noted that my project was a new standard, the 833 Embarcadero, known as Harbor Walk Plaza, is now one of the new standards for what to expect if you're going to do a project of that caliber, what kind of public benefits you should be expected to have in your design. Let's see. And I my criteria is that I have boots on the ground as a 23-year business owner in the heart of the Embarcadero. Makes me a beneficial part to the subcommittee. And so also knowledge about the leases. A lot of these things are going to be done, like I mentioned before, on Tideland's property, which is unique. And taking the 7,500 square feet into consideration for like a medium and under that for a small and a large, I think that the Tidelands is a little bit more convoluted based on lease extension, like you said, with remodeling, but that also works into a remodel. You get a smaller piece of time in your lease. I do know that it's okay. I know that Three Stacks right now, they're a building lease, correct, Eric? So that's different from ground lease, and building leases shouldn't be required to do any public benefits in their renovations, according to the city manager. So I also noted that along the lines, I know you didn't grab everything from public benefits, but knowing that you gave 833 Embarcadero a good standing on the public benefits, there was also, they brought in LEED certification. So that's really important. Also, public restrooms are a huge expense, and I don't know at what point you're going to look into the public benefits as like a hierarchy of like a dollar figure that is equated to like how much of a public benefit it is. But that is an interesting way that if you're going to have a list, it would be nice to have them ranked even in like a 1, 2, 3, 4. Like this counts for, you know, 4 points of public benefit. Like if you were going to say, okay, this is a medium building and it needs to have 30 points of public benefit, well, then it would be nice to have those calibrated into, you know, a point system to meet that. So when somebody's wanting to invest in one of these things, that they can actually go, oh, okay, they're going to want that much. Or they're going to, oh, I could see doing that, and they could put a dollar figure before they, you know, start a giant permit process without knowing full well what they're expected to come up with. Let's see. General plan. That warrant. Also, we're talking about not talking about something, and I think that if somebody is trying to do a development that could possibly be hazardous to the community, that is a whole new spectrum of public benefit, because the thing that we're not talking about is that they want to increase their height. Well, it's one thing to increase it 17 to 25 on the Embarcadero. It's a whole nother can of worms to do it on top of hazardous materials. So that should have its own thing that increases that. It shouldn't be just a formula for raising a roof. It's different. Example, how many do we need? Okay, so like in this situation where if they look at one of these menus and they see EV charging, you know, there's a point where we can't do 4 EV charging stations in Morro Bay. It just doesn't have that capacity. So one of the things that I was suggesting is that perhaps the city council or Harbor Advisory and or the Planning Commission do like a top 10 list every year, because values change, importance of things change. Either we have built it already and we don't need it now, or it's something completely new, like wind energy, that was really important to us. But as the year goes on, what the community desires is going to change. So calibrating that in a top 10 list, I think, would be beneficial, especially if it was community-based information. I talked about that, and I think that does all my inclusions. But yeah, I would love to be a part of the list and everything like that, because there were a bunch that I saw on here, and then there were a bunch that weren't on here. And so I think there's a lot of more valuable ones that I've experienced being a business owner and talking to the community and talking to tourists and talking to other business owners, so, and investors. Anybody else have any comments? And there's nothing to pick on, so I think we can just move on to our next agenda item. Next agenda item is B2, update from the paid parking ad hoc committee.
All right.
Member Myers?
Sure, I'll go ahead. We had a presentation from Scott Graham and the Walker Group on their next version of their update that they gave to the city. They're still investigating that. They took input from the HAB and several of the other commissions, specifically looking at a pilot project or tentatively at a pilot project down and around the Embarcadero. We did provide some oral input at the meeting that was about 3 or 4 weeks ago now, I believe. The exact date handy. We gave them some input. We wanted to re-engage with the ad hoc committee that we'd set up representing, you know, the boat owners, the fishermen, a variety of pieces. From a timing perspective, we couldn't get it together for this meeting, but we'll do that between now and the December 1. We have some tentative ideas on what the HAB would like to see, or that at least the ad hoc committee, I should say, of sort of, you know, fine-tuning that parking, not just maybe broad, but, you know, put some boundaries in there and see if it makes sense to all the business owners, try to make it equitable for the implications on it, but also get some boundaries on what objectives they have to hit to make the parking a worthwhile investment. If you only have three spots but spend a lot of money setting it all up, it doesn't make any sense. So that's where we're at with that. Hopefully we'll have a more formal update at our next meeting in December.
All right.
Any questions?
I would just like to add for the public that it would be nice if anybody in the boating community, the liveaboard community, even restaurateurs, we want to hear from you. So if you want to email one or both of us, we would appreciate anybody who would like to be a part of the subcommittee or just have their input told to us as the subcommittee members. Any questions? Seeing none, I'm going to open it up for public comment. Seeing none, Hyland, anybody in the queue?
Thank you, Chair. We have no raised hands in the queue.
All right. Motion to receive and file. No, we don't need one? Okay.
Nope.
I just feel like we should have a motion now. We've gone through two business items. It just seems wrong. Okay, we're moving on to item B3. I know. I thought it would be. Update from the Marine Services Ad Hoc. I guess that's you as well.
Nice. I was unfortunate that Chris couldn't make it. Chris and I, we did a report last time about the current state of Marine Services. One of the public mentioned earlier about a boatyard. It's not in the cards, at least in the short term. We did go back and talk to our friend German Joe down there to see what direction he's taking his boatyard. There are a number of constraints that are well known about the capacity of the boatyard and upgrades. We did discuss with him his plans. He plans on keeping going with the environment he has in order for him to put a significant investment in that. The city would like to make sure that all the code requirements that are needed for a boatyard of his size are met. The informal discussion we had, at least from the Water Resource Board, he believes he's covered with that because of the processes and procedures he uses to scrape the bottom of the boat and water capture. So, again, according to him, he's covered with that. That was one of the big items. We don't know if there are other EPA or hazardous chemical requirements that he asked to get, and that's actually a direction we were hoping to get from the harbor director of next steps with that. Chris and myself, or the committee, would love to help, but we also don't want to create any unnecessary grief if we start notifying people that could change the German Joe's outlook and the property owner's outlook on the investment they want to make on that property. So I'm going to pause there and look for a little input and direction from the harbor director.
I'd say let's get together and meet offline on this and
okay.
go through what you guys, you know, this and a little more detail and maybe even go down and talk to Joe. And
yeah, Chris and him had a pretty good okay. conversation. It wasn't at the boatyard, so the information he got all can't be necessarily shared, but he's planning on keeping going for now.
Okay, yeah, let's get together and chat and see if there's any next steps you guys can help out with. If there's
yeah, they'd really like to get a new crane, from what I understand.
Yeah. Okay.
That one's older than all of us, I think. All right, that's the rest of my updates. Any questions?
Seeing none? We're all good? Okay, I'm going to open it up for public comment as far as Marine Services go. I know we had an earlier public comment and appreciate that. Yeah, come on up.
Hi, my name is John Hobdall. I'm a Morro Bay resident. I'm also the Ocean Fleet Captain for the Morro Bay Yacht Club. I'm an active sailboat racer. I currently have a Santa Cruz 27. I keep on a trailer behind the museum, the Maritime Museum, in the mast up storage. There's other people like myself that frequently sail there too as well. The biggest issue we have right now is getting our boats in and out of the water. We just had a national sailboat regatta here not too long ago, and it was a great success, but we hired the crane people at Associated Pacific to haul our boats off the trailers and put them in the water and vice versa. So I'm working with the yacht club right now about getting a crane put in at our yacht club, but I really think there needs to be something available to the public as well. My boat weighs about 3,000 pounds, so like most yacht clubs have a crane that is capable of like 2 tons, 4,000 pounds. And most boats like mine, you can trailer them in and you can lift them off and set them in the water and go sailing. Like if you were to travel to any of the other yacht clubs or facilities, public launch facilities, they all have cranes to do that with. Currently, the only way I can get my boat in and out of the water is at the public boat launch down there. And it's a big process that I have to go through to get it in the water and take it back out because I have to use a 30-foot strap and lower my trailer down into the water till it's deep enough to float my sailboat off because it's got a fixed keel, so it's up. It's not like a powerboat that's only got a shallow draft that just floats right off. I've got to make sure the tide's right, and then I've got to put it down in there like that. But so I really think if there's somehow we can maybe get crane put in somewhere, maybe over here by the T-Pier or somewhere along there where the public can come in and get their fishing boats put in the water, the little fishing boats, the sailboats like me, the trailer sailors, they call them. I think that would be really big for the city because it would bring people in from out of town to come, come sail here, come fishing here, all that kind of thing. Port San Luis has a little travel lift over there that they put all their little fishing boats in and out with. But the problem with that is, although it's capable to lift our boats, we can't have our mast up in order to use that facility. And it's almost impossible to put the mast up once it's in the water because our masts are 30 feet and they're heavy. You can't just, push them up. So, a lot of times when I take my boat somewhere else, I'll use the club crane to raise my mast and hook up the rigging, et cetera, et cetera. So I just was hoping maybe at some point maybe there could be like talk of maybe putting in a crane somewhere along the Embarcadero where we could just back our boats up to it. And most people, myself included, would probably be more than willing to pay a small fee to use it. You know what I mean? Just to kind of get some income back in toward the cost of it. but I think the city would really benefit from it, from local residents as well as people from out of town. And that ramp down there, I don't know if anybody's looked at it recently, but it's pretty bad. And there's actually a spot where you got to be careful, because if you put your trailer in too far, it'll go off the cement. Your trailer wheels will go off the cement, and you're stuck. You can't pull it out. So you have to lift it up over the cement to get out. So it's kind of sketchy sometimes. So
I'm aware of that, Paris.
Well, thank you so very much. I have a question for you.
I appreciate that. Oh, go ahead.
When Associated Pacific took your boat out,
yes,
did they charge you?
Yeah, we paid for that.
Do you know how much it was?
They gave us a discount because we were a yacht club. Pardon me?
How much?
I don't remember, because I wasn't in part of that, part of the planning of the thing.
Okay.
But it wasn't too much. It was because they did the whole... Let me start over. We hired them for a period of time, and that period of time was like maybe 4 hours, and that was enough time to get everybody's boats off their trailers and set in the water, and then we would just, put them over on the yacht club dock.
Okay.
And then vice versa, pull them out, set them back down. Okay. So...
All right, thank you very much.
Yeah,
oh, did you want to ask him? Okay, I know it's a... Okay, thank you so much.
Perfect, thank you for your time. Appreciate it.
I just have one quick comment.
Come on up for public comment. We don't get it that often. I don't know what the standard is. I know the mayor always likes 3 minutes, so okay. Go for it.
One thing John mentioned was the launch ramp. If you go too far, your trailer goes off the side, off the end of it. Well, we were trying to pull John's boat out just after the Nationals, Labor Day weekend, and the trailer, the launch ramp, doesn't go all the way to the dock. His trailer actually went sideways a little bit, and some of the wheels went off the side of the ramp, too. So it's both a length issue and a width issue. I just wanted to bring that up.
All right, and I had a question for you, too.
Yeah.
We're just the place that you showed us the pictures of?
Yes.
And then they took it all the way up to the yard?
Yes.
To work on it? Were there telephone lines and electric lines in that pathway to the yard?
No.
At all.
It's my understanding that the owner of that yard had electrical lines put in underground up through the path to his place, because you make a left turn off of the street, and then right at that left turn, there's power lines that go across the street.
Right.
So you couldn't go past his where his entrance was to go back to his yard.
Okay.
They had them all underground. And one of the things about here, from the launch ramp all the way to this end, there's no electrical lines across the Embarcadero.
Right.
Only trees, you got to be careful.
Yeah. Okay.
I do know that if Mary were here, she could talk about the launch ramp as far as the status of the grant. Do you know for the budget?
Yeah.
No. Eric, do you know for the budget? To include for the launch ramp for the Marine Services?
I've put together a design team to start putting in for a grant for that.
Okay, so yeah, the launch ramp is actively working on a grant.
Yeah, the plan is to extend it out and obviously widen it somewhat too, but mostly to extend it down probably another 10 feet.
Yeah, I can talk to Mary. Her daughter and my granddaughter were on the same softball team, so we sat a lot of games, and her son and my grandson went to the same preschool, and they're like inseparable when they get together. So,
thanks again.
Thanks for your time.
Yeah. I do know that when we were working on the Marine Services, and one of the things that came up was power lines and trees and then the weight of the boats in transferring them across the Embarcadero and the infrastructure that would need to be. And that was a cost prohibitive issue that was making it not as viable as I think we all would have liked it to be. So if there's any more discussion or questions, I can just continue on to the next business item. I'll understand. Okay. So we're going to B4, update from the Finance and Budget Ad Hoc Committee. So who's going to take that?
I've been talking. Go ahead, Joe.
I'm in report.
Yeah.
Okay, then.
I have nothing to report for that committee.
Okay, seeing none, we don't. Okay, so we're going to receive and file. Okay, moving on to our second to last item to talk about, Harbor Advisory Board member in public engagement outreach. Sean, you want to start?
Sure. A couple things I want to mention. The Planning Commission has sent the zoning update, the zoning code update, off to council. That's something that will likely appear in front of council in the coming weeks, probably in November. No date has been announced yet. It's not on the next council agenda that just came out today, but sometime within the next 2 to 4 meetings, that's the zoning code update, which is a big deal. It's a part of the general plan that will appear in front of council, so any members of the public that want to read through the zoning code and or contribute public comment should pay attention for that agenda item. You can always subscribe to all city advisory board email subscriptions, basically, to get all the agendas when they are posted. So if you are concerned about public works, go ahead and subscribe to that. As that particular email, subscribe to the Harbor Advisory Board if that concerns you. Subscribe to council, certainly, depending on how concerned a citizen you are. So I wanted to mention that. The other thing I'll mention, this is totally informal, but in response to harbor staff's growing concern about the growing eelgrass that is thriving down there and how it's kind of getting stuck around docks and boats and whatnot, I've been trying to read and figure out what solutions other people have going on, and I have reached out to someone who wrote their master's thesis on feeding seaweed to cows. And so seeing if there's any kind of mutually beneficial relationship between our surplus of eelgrass and or some creative team that wants to collect it and do something with it. So I'm trying to reach out. If anyone has any input on that as to who I might reach out to at Cal Poly, I actually have a couple email chains going to see if I can get some creative team who's interested in doing something for free to get rid of our surplus eelgrass. That's it.
All right. Thank you, Sean. Jeremiah, would you like to put yours?
Yeah, I think I'll just reiterate what I had said earlier on the Maritime Museum. One of the things also, now that I have this opportunity, is going around town and talking to various people, I was surprised at how few people have been down on the waterfront and how few they live here and how few people have been to the Maritime Museum. And I would encourage anybody who hasn't been there to drop down. Everything is free. It's an incredibly historical the artifacts and displays they have are amazingly historical. One of the things that I find that people have no idea about, I'm going to make this as brief as I can, is during World War II, there was only one vessel torpedoed on the west coast of the United States, and that occurred here on the Central Coast. And 36 of the crewmen, captain and crew, were rescued by the tugboat Alma. And that boat was here, working out of here, and is currently on display at the Maritime Museum. They also have the life vest that the captain of the boat was wearing, and he had written a little legend on the life vest. We also have just received the first mate's entire history of his time on the boat and his time at sea, which I believe he had 45 years at sea. We have his licenses, his seaman's card, a folder with all of his licenses and so forth. But it's very interesting. So again, it just amazes me how many people did not realize that we had been torpedoed here, and we have the boat that rescued all of the crew. So there's a lot to see and a lot to learn at the museum. There's a lot of books and so forth in the gift shop. So it's an educational experience as well as a lot of fun. And it's very, very children-friendly.
Thank you, Member O'Brien. Member Myers?
Actually, the one item I wanted to bring up, and it kind of blends into future agenda items, is the participated in the coastal cleanup September 17th. Actually, have a picture in the deck there, pumping something up the hill or up the stairs. One comment is that was very successful. We filled up the big container, but also the follow-on piece of that, where we're the rest of the items down there are going to be brought up the hill. Is there any timelines for that? Or?
Well, as you know, I think last meeting or maybe it was the meeting before, we brought that we're starting up a skiff management program, and part of it's going to include the beach down there, and you all wanted to see a little more detail back on the Oyster Beach part of it, or the mm-hmm. Bayshore Bluffs Beach, however you want to call it. We were hoping to bring that this meeting, but we're working on the dock part of the skiffs for now, so that'll be coming back maybe December to look at that from a policy standpoint, what we want to do down there. We're going to continue doing cleanups down there and continue pulling things out of there, and that was a great effort, and thanks for your help on that. We pull out everything from old junk boats and rotted plastic tarps to there. Some vehicle that has been long buried on that beach down there that's starting to come up, and we pulled a front end axle and wheels out of the ground. So there's a lot down there. Frame's still down there. It's pretty amazing.
I mean, I guess from an outreach perspective, that was part of a much larger coastal cleanup.
Right, that was the annual coastal cleanup, yeah. The Coastal Commission.
How would we, I guess it's a little more than outreach, but you'd like to get some more community. There was a lot of people that wanted to help.
Yeah, if we do another group one, we can put the word out, you know, through the friends and other places. I'm sure we can get some more volunteers down.
Okay, thank you. That's all I have.
Okay, wonderful. So, well, my outreach is, K through 12, your college. Maybe we can get something going on there. So, and in light of that, I have with the elementary school, Del Mar in Morro Bay, confirmation that we get to do a poster contest on boating safety. So in December, January, Becca Kelly, head of operations of the Harbor Department, is going to give a 15-minute-ish boat safety demonstration to the 4th and 5th graders. They're going to then take that information and do an art poster. And we, the HAB, get to vote on our top three. And so the first prize will be a 4-person hour boat drive on the Morro Bay Harbor boat. And then I'm going to pull some of the businesses along the Embarcadero to sweeten the prize pot for doing certain things like maybe a double kayak tour or some stuffed animals. I know a place that does that. So our little, fish and chips somewhere, something to get them excited about doing it and get them excited about going on the water and enjoying their Morro Bay Harbor. When I talked to Amy Barton at the school desk, she's like, there's some that haven't even been to the beach or been out on the water. And I'm like, that is a travesty to live in Morro Bay, go to school and see the ocean and not put on a life jacket. So my next thing is for Chamber, a downtown shop sip and stroll is November 27th. It's a great way to support your local businesses and to get out there and see something that you haven't realized before in a fun way, because they serve food and alcohol. Also, Breakfast on the Bay is October 19th, and as far as my other outreach, I have the EML. They are interviewing candidates in preparation for the election, so I might have an update with them on our next meeting. The next meeting that we will have in December, we will have a presentation from Bob Fowler, who is a member of the executive board of the Embarcadero Master Leaseholders, is what EML stands for. And they are going to tell us and explain to us their stand on current events that affect the harbor and the city council. So that will be something. And that leads us to future agenda items. Does anybody have a future agenda item to propose?
I'd love to see a either November or December report from the people who are putting on the new harbor activity this weekend on Saturday. It'd be great to hear like how that event went, and have just a brief presentation about the number of people that visited, the kinds of things that people enjoyed, what might be in store in the future, if there is something like that in the future.
Yeah, I'd be happy to do that myself, and we expect that it'll also appear in the local newspaper there. They've been advertising it for us, and they'll be there on Saturday also. But I'll be happy to do that.
Okay, so I think I spoke out of turn. I think I needed to open public comment before doing future agenda items. And so I'm going to open up public comment. Do we have anybody for any for item B5, public outreach? Hyland, do we have anybody in the queue?
Thank you, Chair. We have no raised hands in the queue.
Okay, I'm checking that box. And then you mentioned future agenda. Is that like a possible? Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, here we go.
I just wanted to make a quick mention that if the harbor is doing a cleanup down there on all those boats, if they want to let us know at Morro Bay Yacht Club, we can spread it out to our members and maybe get some more volunteers. So, and perfect. Mary's a member at Morro Bay, so you could get it to her, and she could get it to who we call the troll, who sends out our...
The troll.
Yeah, the troll.
Yeah, the troll. Cool. Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much. Okay, so with the future agenda item, how would you word that or request us to vote on it?
If Jeremiah is willing to give a presentation, as an agenda item, I was just thinking we would have a presenter kind of do it. But if Jeremiah is the point man on that, I've scratched that request.
Okay. Or we could just say a report on.
Okay. So on your outreach, you'll get back to us on how successful.
Absolutely.
Awesome. Perfect. And anybody else who's possible future agenda items?
If you want to put the kayaks on there for next time.
We're planning on bringing it. I don't need it declared to get it on there. It's perfect. Our plan. It's already there.
Okay. I think we're all good. No more future agenda items. We are adjourned. Thank you, everybody, for public comments, and I loved it, and our presentation. Good meeting. Thanks, guys.